Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
It's the Jeff McNeil and the Pete Alonso situation.
Those guys have to go. They have to. They can't be on this team next year. And I've loved Pete, but this was so bad that something needs to be shaken up in a big way. And he might not be the problem. I'm not sure what the problem is, but he opted out. You don't have to bring him back. Jeff McNeil shouldn't have been on this team last year. The things that you can do easily to shake up the core, you have to. As unpopular as it might be, that Pete Alonso, one of the best homegrown position players in franchise history, doesn't finish his career here. You just went through the most embarrassing situation you could possibly go through. And I'm not trading Francisco Lindor. You're obviously not getting rid of Juan Soto. So where do you shake this thing up? And those are two places that
you've got to be left field, first base. You got to figure out what you're doing at second base. And you got to feel like, what is Vientos going to be here? I think he's going to be here. And Beatty, what about Brett Beatty? What are you going to do with him? Yeah. I guess he could play second base, I guess. Is Luis Acuña Jr. A future player? You know, what about Mauricio? Is he a future player? I mean, there's a lot of young players that you'd like to see up here, and fans clamoring for them because they're getting tired of the old guard, if you will.
Yeah, there was one combative, back to the Yankees for a second. There's one combative Brian Cashman press conference. You remember Dan was like at the owners' meetings and he was like going after and defending the Yankees and we did this and we made it to the ALCS.
We call that an Aaron Glenn.
Yeah, right. But Brian Cashman had like, you know, was wearing all his World Series rings while he was doing this. And yeah, Aaron Glenn's doing nothing but wearing joggers. I don't see that combative Brian Cashman coming out today. I think you're going to get nern Brian Cashman. And then we nern. And then everybody be like, okay, well, here we go again. See you next postseason when another team beats you and we have the same conversation over and over and over.
Well, I mean, so you can just say you're bringing Trent Grisham back, you're bringing Cody Bellinger back, you're bringing this one back. What about this guy? Is he getting a chance? I mean, you know, you got to still be very fluid in free agency. You know, these are all the questions that will be asked.
All right, let's go to Anthony in Belleville. What's going on, Anthony?
Boomer and Geo. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. What's going on? What's happening there, Anthony?
Hey, I don't know. There's too many Aaron coaches in this city here. The Yankees are going to go through the same thing next year. Booney, he starts the Red Sox series by switching the whole lineup after they just mowed through the end of the season, killing teams, and then he starts Rosario batting first, or Slater, whoever was batting first, and mixing up the whole lineup. The analytics in the game is too much for the Yankees. He needs to stop that. And I'm lost for words. If they're obviously going to bring Boone back.
Yeah,
and
well,
it's going to be the same old crap.
All right, so if you remember, this is the beginning of the Red Sox series. He changes that lineup. Everybody's pissed off because they don't have Ben Rice, and
Rice,
they don't have Jazz Chisholm in the lineup because it's lefty-lefty, and that's the whole thing about the lefty-lefty thing. And then when we get to the next series against the Toronto Blue Jays, everybody's screaming and yelling because they got lefties going against lefties. I mean, they can't win unless they actually do win. So guess what? They're going to be in the playoffs again next year. They're going to be fine. They're going to get Gerrit Cole back. They'll sign one of these free agents. You'll be happy. It will be one of those seasons where they get there. And hopefully when they get there, they have their full complement of pitchers. Because if they do, then they're going to be really tough to beat.
Right, right. And, gee, I'm surprised you say that you want to get rid of Alonso. Because without Alonso, you guys aren't going anywhere this year.
Why do you say that? I mean, the guy had one of his worst years of his career, and they went the furthest in the playoffs.
That was last year, yes.
Okay. And he had one huge home run that obviously against Milwaukee, but you know they were a hell of a lot better regular season team in a year that he was bad. I mean, last year he had a better year, and they didn't even make the playoffs. So
I'd take Alonso any day.
All right.
For the Yankees.
Okay. And by the way, David Stearns, the way he talked about run prevention – after the season, run prevention.
It was a big thing. Run prevention was a very big thing. I remember that.
Run.
Because you came in and you said, did you hear what David Stern said? And I said, what did he say? He goes, run prevention. You were all over this whole run prevention thing.
I mean, I think that translating run prevention into Pete Alonso is not going to be our first baseman.
Well, he could be your DH.
He could, but he's going to look for bigger money than that. He's going to want, and maybe there's a team that gives it to him, and he'll have to crawl back to the Mets to try to have him match it, or maybe the Mets are the only team willing to pay him. I don't know.
Well, the thing about it is
can't
believe
we're doing this again.
Yeah, I know that, but the thing about it is that, you know, not only is David Stearns thinking about run prevention, they're all thinking about run prevention. They all think about it.
All of the general managers?
Hey, and even the assistant managers, the dugout managers, all the guys that are in the league now, they think about what are the percentages of run prevention?
Yeah, I mean, and now the Mets have a new bench coach who's been talking about he's an infield defense guy, he's a run prevention guy.
This is the tact. Now about keeping, well, you know, how about stop throwing meatballs over the plate?
That would help. Dave, Croton on Hudson. Good morning, Dave.
Gio, just to piggyback on the last caller, you're out of your mind if you think the Mets should get rid of Pete Alonso. Where are they without him? I know they didn't make the playoffs.
Where are they with him? They're not in the playoffs.
What first baseman in baseball produces like him?
I mean, what first baseman in baseball threw the ball over the pitcher's head and got his hamstring hurt. It was a bad defensive.
One play, Gio. One play.
I mean, like, what are the Mets doing with Pete Alonso? What are they doing with him exactly?
Well, leave him there and let him have 80 extra base hits a year and drive in 125 runs every year and hit 35 home runs. Just leave him there and miss the playoffs
and put your polar bear hat on. Great. Get a Shake Shack. Got to do something to shake it up and change it. It's not good enough. So, Pete Alonso, you had your moment. Great. You clapped. He broke the home run record for the Mets. Yay, he rode on the ball. Down goes Straw. Now, see you.
Goodbye. So, that's your opinion, and you're allowed to have your opinion. I love your opinions. I want them to keep Pete Alonso. I do. I'm sorry, I do.
It's fine.
But I don't want them paying 6 years, $30 million a year. I want it at a reasonable price.
No one's giving him that.
That's what I'm saying. But I'm just saying, you know, he's got Boris as an agent. So I want Pete here. I'm a Met fan. I've been a long-time Met fan. Everybody knows this. And I love Pete at first base. No matter about the run prevention situation or whatever it is, I just like watching him at bat. I like him in a Mets uniform. I like him after games when he's goofy and they're winning and he gets all, emotional about it. I love all that stuff about him. And I do believe that there is something to be said about being like, you know how Derek Jeter was a true Yankee, and I know that he won all those championships and came up with all those big plays.
Yeah, I mean, that's a money. Tough comparison, man.
But what I'm saying is that it's okay to have a guy that you've developed go all the way through his career in your uniform. And then at the end, you know, whatever it is, if it's a three-year deal or a four-year deal, which I would prefer, and you want to trade him to give him a chance to go win a World Series if you guys are out of it, then you do that by the player and you do right by him then.
Well, we'll see.
I'm not saying overpay for him to keep him here. I'm not saying it's got to be that. I would like him to remain in a Met uniform.
Okay.
That's all.
All right. I'm not going to sit here and argue with you on it. I also think that we'll see how the rest of the league views a player like Pete Alonso.
But I also need to know, like, who's replacing him. Like, if you're going to sit here and tell me that, you know, a guy like Freddie Freeman is going to replace him in his prime, okay, I'm all for that. But I can't let a guy that hit 38 home runs, drove in 126 runs, batted 275 this year, I can't just let that guy go out on the market and not even try to make a play for him, unless, of course, somebody gives him a ridiculous deal that I'm not going
to
pay for.
He went into the offseason last year, got absolutely no interest, and had to sign a contract that he didn't want to sign. He's opting out now, and we'll see. He's a year older, and I just, if he can come back at a very discounted rate because no one else views him as a valuable player enough to give him the money that he wants, then okay.
There's also another thing about him that I really, really like. He plays almost in every game. He never misses a game. He loves playing baseball.
Well, yeah.
He's always out there. Well, he's always there. He's always in the lineup.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's no soft tissue issues. There's no, oblique issue. There's no hamstring issue. There's never, you know, he gets hit with pitches how many times? And he gets up and he goes and he plays every freaking day.
Yeah.
I love that.
Well, that's true. You know what I love more is not having a massive collapse and making the playoffs. And if they bring back the same core of this team,
then it's a problem. They're going to have to make some decisions. No question.
So what are the tough
it.
Decisions?
Well, then? The Jeff McNeil, the Brandon Nimmo. Do you want to keep those guys here?
I mean, McNeil, no.
What about Francisco Alvarez? Is he your catcher now in the future? Do you believe that? What are you doing at second base? What are you doing with Brett Beatty? What are you doing with Mark Vientos? I mean, like, there's a lot of moving parts here that can be fixed and can be changed, or you could allow guys to actually grow up and grow into something.
I mean, I guess the thing I would ask is if Pete Alonso is this, like, must-have, can't believe that you would ever think about getting rid of him, then why is he in this contract situation with the Mets again?
Well, if they end up losing him, then, you know, good for him.
Because they didn't want him.
Well, good for him, but I also know
they were ready to lose him last year.
I would, much like I said with the Yankees about the pitching staff is going to be a lot better next year. Hopefully Kodai Senga is, you know, got his act together and he's going to be an important part of whatever happens next year. But these young pitchers that showed out this year, they're all going to have opportunities and they're going to be a lot better than they were. And maybe he'll add another pitcher or two. I'm sure he will. But I personally want Pete Alonso at first base. I just don't want to overpay for him.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
I also have tears in my eyes from thinking about Pete Alonso talking about how he wants a 7-year contract. Like, come on, Pete, come back to us here. There's no way he's getting 7 years. Now, I would say you and I differ on this all the time. I don't care how many years he wants. It's all about the money. So if I'm willing to go 5 years for 150, I'd be willing to go 7 years for 150. It's a lower AAV. Mm-hmm. It's the same amount of money being spent. If you get to the point where in 5 years you want to move on, you just cut him and you pay the two years anyway. Like, to me, it's not about the years as it is about the cost. Pete's going to want $25 or $30 million a year for the entirety of 7 years. And if that's the case, now nobody's going to be willing to give it to him. But if somebody is, good luck. Like, good luck.
No, elsewhere. He's not getting 7 years. On what planet is Pete going to get 7 years?
He's lucky if he gets five, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. I think it could be. Now, what he got last year was unfair. I mean, and he came back and he responded. I mean, as unfair as it could be for a contract.
I was going to say,
he
got the highest paid first base. He was the highest paid first baseman.
Yeah, they did split AAV. The difference. I'm just talking about in terms of length and now the ability. And he's got the power to opt out, which he obviously will. And I just think that because he did answer a lot of questions last year offensively, he had a really, really, I mean, almost borderline great offensive season. So, you know, it's not going to be 2 years. I don't think it's going to be three. You know, you start to get into that for the Mets. I'm talking about the Mets evaluation is going to be, and maybe you can make the case it shouldn't be, but based on what he means and all the other homegrown and all the other things, you know, I do think that the Mets should offer an extra year, maybe two. But there is not a team in baseball that's coming with 6 or 7 years for Pete Alonso. It's just not happening.
Yeah, I mean, even six, again, like if it's the same money, what's the difference? If my offer to him would be like, all right, well, we're going to give you $150 million. We want over 5 years. You want it over seven? So be it. I'm fine with that. Man, he's going to want more money. I mean, I'd maybe go up incrementally over that. There's no world in which Pete Alonso is getting a $200 million contract from me. Maybe somebody else is going to be willing to give that to him. There's no way. Like if you do the math, he's going to want for sure $30 million a year, right? So if you go 30 times 7, that's going to be 210.
Yep.
So he's going to be looking for a $200 million contract. at 7 years, $30 million a year, $200 million. That's going to be the number. I don't know this. I'm just saying, like, using common sense. And in my mind, there's no way. Like, maybe 170. Maybe if you do 170 divided by, let's see, 6, let's say. 170 divided by 6
is under 30. 20.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, maybe the first couple years are 30, and then it goes down from there. All right, fair enough. I'll do that. There's no world. That's me extending. There's no world in which I'm going over 170. None. I'm sorry. At that, like, you got to draw the line somewhere. For a guy who's going to be, I want him to DH now, let alone in 7 years or 5 years. So I want him to DH now. I can't clog that spot up for 7 years.
No
for
near way.
It's not
There's
happening.
No way. I mean, I factor this in a little bit, like the benchmark of him eventually possibly getting to 500 home runs as a Met.
Yeah.
Like, that would be an amazing thing. Like, think about when he broke Darryl's record. That was cool for Met fans. He's a homegrown Met. All right. But I don't think that Met fans realize, like, how far he's off from 500.
And I don't even care about that. But go ahead.
I hear you, but a lot of people do. Like, I think Evan cares more than you, and maybe Hoff cares more than you.
But I'm trying to build a winning team. I couldn't care less about the benchmark myself.
Understood. But I say that because there's value there, too. Because if he's chasing 500 now, they can monetize that more.
Fun. That'd be cool. Yeah,
so it would be good for most fans, and they'd also make some money off of it. So it could be a win-win. But he's at 264. Let's say he signs a 5-year deal, which I think could be a year more than he actually signs. But let's just say that for easy math, right? And he averages 40 home runs, which I still think is a bit high. But he does that for five. That's 200 home runs. He's still short of, you know, 500 home runs. At that point, he would be at 464. And then, obviously, you know, another good season or two, he's going to get there. I'm not saying he can't get there, but it's not nearly as imminent as I think some Met fans who care about that stuff make it seem to be.
Yeah, I do think that it's going to come down to what the market says. So we could talk about it. Pete could talk about what he wants. do we really think the market is going to say that Pete Alonso is going to get a 7-year deal?
No, there's no chance.
Okay.
There's no chance.
Me neither. So, and if it did, then you say goodbye,
yep.
You move on. But in the likely event that it doesn't, now you come back down to reality. Okay, well, then what would the Mets be willing to give? They're going to let the market dictate it, just like they did a year ago. And maybe the market's going to be more significant for Pete. I would hope for his sake that it would be. I would think that it would be. How much more? Is it going to be a lot more than 3-4 years? Is it going to be more than 5 years? I can't imagine that being the case. So I'm good with 5 years, 150. If I absolutely had to and the market says 6 for 170, okay. If the market says that and I really want Pete back, yes. And it would be, and for me, under the idea that, Pete, you are going to now be our primary DH. You'll play a little first base. Let's say you play half the time at first base, but primary DH.
Mm-hmm.
And in big games, certainly, you know, you don't have to say this to him now, but like in the bigger games, he's going to be DHing.
Uh-huh.
And you want to have a better defensive presence there at first base. But as the time goes on, he's going to be DH. And I trust that he's going to hit 30 home runs, drive in 100 runs every year for the next 5 years. At the very least, that's what I would expect from Pete Alonso. So to me, that's worth the investment. Anything more than that is just absurd.
I agree. Well, listen, one thing that we know about Pete Alonso, he provided, you know, good, not that he really needs it, but he provided good, he had Juan Soto's back, and I think Juan Soto in front of him was good for Pete Alonso. Let's face it. You know, Juan's always on base. Pete's getting more fastballs. He hit more than he did the year before. Like, he didn't miss good pitches this year. He didn't expand the zone as much. I think he refined his approach, which is great. But Pete very well might have a decision where a team, I don't know, who knows, Toronto, not Toronto at this point, but some team that's desperate to give away money, and maybe there's an extra year, or maybe there's an extra $30 or $40 million attached to the deal. Pete very well might, you know, if you really love being a Met, you might have to leave a few bucks on the table to remain a Met.
Yeah, and I don't think he's going to do that.
I don't think he will either, okay. Because of last year. I think he's pissed off.
Now, a little bit of a bigger picture thing. For me, this is just me. If I'm building a team, I want balance. And I want a couple of high-octane, superstar-type power bats. Or impact bats. Doesn't necessarily have to be power. They have one in Juan Soto. He's not going anywhere. That's the move I would have made. They did. He's their cornerstone piece. To me, you need then one more. And their choice should be, is it going to be Lindor or is it going to be Alonso? It's why I would trade Lindor if I could, because I think now is going to be the best value for Lindor.
Yep.
Being that his defense is already declining. He's only going to get older. And he's getting paid, you know, a lot of money for the next 6 years, whatever's left on his contract. I would rather invest in the power and production offensively of Pete Alonso to complement Soto. My tandem would be Soto, Alonso. And then I would use the rest of the money to diversify, whether it be in the rotation,
mm-hmm.
whether it be in building a better, well-rounded roster around him. But my two bats would be Soto and Alonso. Now, the easy thing to do for them would be to let Alonso go and make it Lindor and Soto. I just don't like that you wouldn't have another power bat behind Juan Soto instead. And I feel like you could make up some of Lindor's numbers with a better balanced lineup.
All right, interesting. Question for you. Number one, do you think that the Mets will be, on any level, amenable to trading Brandon Nimmo?
I don't know this for a fact. I would have to think that they would be open to that if it presented itself, yes. Or at least aggressively looking for it.
I would be.
Yeah.
And whether or not they will be, I don't know. But I think that I would be, and I think that they should be.
Right.
So that was the first question. The second question is...
but his value is clearly not the same as...
No, yeah, they'd have to eat a little bit of money. Right. But I'm just kind of, I'm getting to a different point. Yeah. So you say Soto and Pete. Well, if they're able to trade Nimmo, why can't it be Soto and Tucker? Why not? Let Pete walk.
Well, but...
Trade Nimmo.
Here's why. Because you'd have to move on from Lindor to make it just that two and get... Like, Nimmo's money is not as significant as Lindor.
No, it's not.
Now,
but
you could say that
Lindor's a better player.
Okay, I understand that for now, but he's also potentially... he is declining defensively.
Yeah, the bad year defensively.
Potentially going to get worse sooner than later. And by the way, I'm not saying they're going to trade Lindor because I don't think that they will, but that would be the thing that I would be looking to do. And then you could say, well, why not just have three stars? Okay, well, then you could have Lindor and Soto and then pick your third. Is it going to be Tucker? Is it going to be Alonso? Like, there's different ways to invest that. Either way, it involves moving on from either Lindor and Nimmo, or one or the other. I would look to move on from both of those if I could, and invest in Pete's power, which I think is the most sound investment. You're not getting that from Tucker. You could get good production elsewhere from Tucker. I don't think you could bank on the power that you're getting or that you've gotten from Pete, especially in New York.
No, no, you're not getting that power. But what you're doing is you're becoming, you know, a better defensive yep. team. You're becoming more of a contact team. And by the way, you know, listen, I hope he stays with the Yankees. If they're ever able, now if they can't trade Nimmo, then I don't think there's, well, then he could play center field, actually, Bellinger. But I think there's a lot of options for the Mets now because we see, like, we worry about some of their guys who are making a lot of money. And that's undeniable. And we, as much as Cohen's got, it's not an endless pit of here. I mean, he's going to have some solvency here. So
it's also not just about the money. It's about taking positions away from players who could be better to do those, whether it's Alonso and his deficiencies, whether it's Nimmo and his deficiencies,
yep.
whether it's Lindor, Soto and his, like, all those guys have clear areas of deficiency.
No question about it.
That's, to me, even more important than the money.
Yes, and I also think, and listen, this is a bigger, broader off-season discussion. It starts with Pete today, but if you let Diaz walk, and I don't know if a lot of Met fans would want to do that, but if you let Diaz walk in, you want to give Holmes the job as closer for a year, you save a ton of money, all right? You have Sproat, you definitely have McClain, you got some young arms who aren't making big money in the rotation. Like, there is a way to bring back Pete, to trade Nimmo and to make a real run at Tucker or Bellinger.
BT and Sal on the Fan. When we come back, we'll reset down with the king topic of the day. It is the New York Jets.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
It's no surprise that you have, you know, both sides, and really with the Mets making the hire of the bench coach here. To me, it's not what I would want, and it just shows you. It's almost like I'm waving the white flag. I don't even care anymore. It doesn't matter who the coaches are, who the bench coaches are. Let the players go do it because we know what these are. These are analytical moves. They are extensions of the front office, and really they should be largely insignificant.
I usually don't care who's coaching first or third base or who's hitting fungos or who's the outfield coordinator or the roving minor league instructor. I'm kind of with you there. Because it's so driven by numbers. This strikes me different for the Mets here. I really believe that this is now Stearns putting his fingerprints more on the franchise, and this is a direct shot or a direct message to Mendoza. If Mendoza stumbles early, Kai Correa will be the manager. They have no connection. Correa is about 10 years younger, didn't play in the minors, didn't coach together. He comes from multiple different organizations. And the way the season went down last year for the Mets here, the entire staff has been overhauled. So the next guy to go, whether it's right or wrong, unfair or not, the next guy to go is going to be Mendoza. And Stearns now has brought in his guy. If the Mets don't play crisply, whether it's April, May, or however, whatever that finish line would be for them to make the determination it's time to make a move, Correa would be the new manager.
But Mendoza's Stearns guy as well. So I don't think Stearns is looking to get rid of Mendoza. I think that, you know, Mendy is his guy and he does believe in him. Now, I hate the idea that you would hire a manager and force upon him a coach that he's never worked with before. Like that.
Yeah, well, you were big on that before this happened.
It just doesn't make sense. It's why, but I wave the white flag. I give up. I give up because they're never going to get it. The Yankees aren't going to get it with their data and their analytics and not having a feel for it. They think what we think is stupid. And by the way, even if you fired Boone, let's just say hypothetically, I know we'll keep it to the Mets here.
Yep.
If they fired Boone, he's an extension of the front office. So what do you think would happen? You have to get rid of the whole thing and then have somebody with a new philosophy come in. So it's not just the manager. Same thing with Mendoza. What do you think would happen if the Mets fired Mendoza and Kai Correa takes over? Kai Correa? Like, that's who you want to manage the New York Mets?
Not even the Correa you want most. You'd rather have Carlos Correa batting somewhere behind Soto.
At least this one's cheaper, Kai Correa. And by the way, he's done some nice things. I was talking about it yesterday.
Who knows what Kai Correa has done? Bench coach, whatever.
I wouldn't know him if he fell out of a tree onto my lap or whatever the saying is. I have no idea. I wouldn't know anything about him. But Hannah Kaiser, who I work with on Baseball Night in New York, said that he was good with the defense alignment and whatever.
With the Guardians. He was doing the defense.
Yeah. Okay, great. Like, to me, that's great. Oh, they're going to hire a new hitting coach. Yeah, that's great. You know what I'd rather see? Get some good hitters. You want to improve defense? Get Nimmo out of the outfield. Get Pete off of first base. Get a younger, better defensive shortstop. Get an actual center fielder. Like, that to me is how you improve defensively. Not, what is Kai Correa going to push some buttons and magically make the Mets better defensively?
No. How do you even judge how well you position somebody? You know, like, so what'd you say? She said that he's, like, renowned for...
Well, whatever he did it well with the... I think it was with the Phillies.
Was it the Guardians from a defensive coordination and then 3 years on the bench for the Giants for a couple
for
years?
For the Giants, okay, yeah.
So, just to be clear, this is not me saying that, you know, Kai Correa is going to elevate the Mets. I mean, he might have literally a neutral impact or even a negative impact on the Mets. I mean, it can go either way. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying, and luckily for you and other Mets fans, the good players, the better, they're coming. But before you get to free agency, you've got to solidify the staff. And listen, to me, the concept of allowing somebody to bring in people that they value, that they want to work in, like Mendoza with Gibbons.
Right.
You give somebody that latitude when you first bring them in. I think you stop giving them that room when you're not sure if they're the guy for the job. And that's what I'm saying. I can't prove this. Right. I strongly believe that even if it was the smallest level, that the Mets thought about firing Mendoza, whether it's right or wrong. When you clean out the entire staff, including a pitching coach, who's been revered, he's been here for a long time, but has been revered, and the only guy that's left standing is the first base coach, who's amazing.
And you can't move on from him.
He's phenomenal. Yeah, yeah. And Mendoza, they're telling you without telling you that they don't believe in Mendoza enough to give him the juice to hire his new staff. They're doing it for him, and they're doing it for him with somebody that they believe can take the reins from Mendoza if they have to fire Mendoza. That's what's happening.
Yeah, and I just can't get behind that. I'm sorry, because I don't think it's putting somebody in a position to succeed. I don't think that the Mets and David Stearns want to fire Carlos Mendoza. I do agree with you that there at least had to be some thought about it, because you wouldn't just fire the entire staff.
Exactly.
And be like, oh, everything's, you know, good. I do believe that they believe in him, but it is with a very short leash. Like, all right, you better get this thing fixed. And maybe there are deeper issues that we're not privy to that were going on, like that they think, well, this is on the manager to help clean up. Whatever it may be, use your imagination, figure it out. I mean, a team with that much talent shouldn't have 83 wins. I don't care what anybody says. It's unacceptable. So you can blame the pitching all you want. There was more to it than just that, because look at the Cincinnati Reds roster. They won 83 games and made the playoffs over a tiebreaker over the Mets. So even with the pitching, the Mets still should have been better what they were. And they were one of the worst teams in baseball since June 13th on. That's more than just not having some starting pitching. So I do think that there was more to it. And maybe they're holding the Mendoza's feet to the fire a little bit. I just don't understand why you wouldn't, if you truly believed in the manager, why wouldn't you want him to pick the people he wants to surround himself with? I'm not saying that he doesn't like Kai Correa. I have no idea. But he doesn't know him.
Well, that's the point. They're shoving him down his throat. Now, ideally, I would like my manager to pick his guys. But that's why, the way I frame it, Sal, think about what I said to start the show. They are doing this for him because they don't have that full conviction.
But front offices do this
that Mendoza's
now.
I agree with that.
I hate that the sport has come to
but
this.
They didn't do that to Mendoza when he first started. There was full, hey, this
well,
is
no,
your
not
show.
Really. I mean, because he had a lot of the holdovers.
Well, not the pitching coach, but I'm talking about the bench coach. Like Gibbons, right? Yeah. Gibbons was brought in by Mendoza.
I don't even know if that was his number one choice. Now, again, I don't know this. we could actually get people on who have reported on this and would know. I don't believe Gibbons was the first choice of Mendy. I think he knew him and there was familiarity there. I don't think it was a...
Okay, even if it wasn't his first choice and whatever degree of familiarity was or wasn't there, and you and I both believe it was there, I think we both know it's not here now, which right. is the point. Like, you think about this, Sal, and whether it's unfair to Mendoza, which I don't think it is. I think it maybe would have been unfair if they fired him. One really good year, one catastrophe based on the expectations. Let's use the third year to split the difference. That was my mindset the day after the Mets season ended. But right now, common sense, forget about all the emotion, the opinions, the money, and the Soto, and the Lindor. Forget about that. Just use faceless names and a faceless team. Incredibly disappointing season. The entire coaching staff is fired. A $400 million investment to win a championship. And the manager's brought back, but here's a coach from two different organizations who has no connection to the manager who really floundered a year ago. What do you think that's saying? That's saying exactly what I'm telling you. It's saying if they start out 9-20, Mendoza's gone crazy, the manager.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second, because I'm just going to disagree in that. By the way, you might be right. I'm going to disagree and give the Mets, and maybe I shouldn't do this, the benefit of the doubt, saying that they're not hiring a bench coach with the thought process of, we're looking to get Mendy out, and then he could just slide in and take over. If you're doing that, you've got no shot. That's already set up to fail. You can't do that. It would be any organization, anything. Well, we're going to hire this guy, but we kind of think he might not be it, and we'll hire the guy behind him just in case. Like, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. You hired Mendoza, you should believe in him, to the point where if you truly did believe in him, you would let him say, here's what I need around me to be successful. The problem is, Major League Baseball front offices, the majority of them, if not all of them, don't believe that that's the best way. I believe it's the best way. They don't. So David Stearns may believe that this is the best way, seeing somebody in Kai Correa that he believes to be an asset to his organization because of his intelligence, because of his defensive skill, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking at him as an asset. Okay, how can we bring this asset into the organization? Where can we put him to try to make us better? That, to me, is an analytical approach of, okay, Kai Correa may be a useful piece to an organization, but is that really what you want for your manager to have as his bench coach without having any familiarity? That's where I push back and say no.
And by the way, it's not ideal. I'm with you on that. But that's independent of what I think the Mets are thinking. Now, you said something that's very important here earlier. Mendoza's Stearns' guy. That's the first real move that he made, right, when he came here for the Brewers. So
yes,
he
yes.
wants to see him succeed and use the term thread the needle. I also know that he's smart enough that he knows he's got to thread the needle just in case. Because, Sal, wasn't just that, and there were pitching issues, and I'm not saying it was all Mendoza's fault. A lot of injuries. There were some circumstances, but there was something off about the 2025 Mets. I know that the 2024 chemistry with Iglesias and some of the guys, JD Martinez, all right, that was unique, and they bottled that, and it worked. They almost got to the World Series, and they overachieved in large part, and you respect that. But last year, there was a dullness. There was a lack of, I use the word character at times, but if that's too strong for some, definitely a lack of cohesion and connectivity. So I think when you identify that, which the Mets had to, because Stearns is not a dummy, neither is Cohen, you've got to have a succession plan lined up, and I believe that this is it. And think about it. Stearns is young, right? He's a young guy. He's a young executive. And the days of, Don Zimmer and these other baseball lifers sitting in the coach's office, having bourbons until 2 in the morning.
You're talking shop.
Exactly. Or smoking 13 cigarettes in the tunnel in between pitching changes. It's over. So Stearns is young. Kai Correa is young. The Mets, I'm not saying it's perfect, but to me, this is what they're thinking. That's their plan.
BT and Sal on the Fan, our friends at Town Fair Tire, remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. The other part of this, where Brad Ausmus was hired with the Yankees to be the bench coach.
Yep.
There was some thought to what you're saying now about Kai Correa being like, well, things go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Ausmus has managerial experience, blah, 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 blah. And it turns out that they really just hired Ausmus to be the bench coach for Aaron Boone, thinking that he was an asset. So
mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that that was the case. But even if that is the case, it's still not good enough for me.
Well, think about this. The addition of Ausmus, who's former manager,
yeah.
as we know, the way the Yankees treat their managerial spot, very different than the way Cohen's Mets treat it.
Right.
They whacked Buck quick.
Right.
Like, Buck had a tremendous first year. then things went sideways. Next.
Well, there's been multiple GMs. Yes. To you know what point, I mean? Yes.
So there's been more turnover, yeah, more volatility, whereas then sometimes to our chagrin, the patience with the Yankees is a problem. So, you know, in the 5 years that Cohen's earned, in the 5 years he's owned the Mets, he has told us, I'm not standing pat. If things aren't met at the level that I think that they should be met, I have no problem making changes. Hal has not done that.
Brad is calling from Mineola. What's up, Brad?
Hey, bud.
All right, gentlemen. I thought we were done with the Mets, but here we are.
We're just getting started.
The winter's just started.
We're just getting started. I know, because we got nothing really else to talk about that's good. But with that being said, listen, let me make this clear. I love Mendy. I do. But just like similar to what's going on with the Yankees, everybody talking about Boone, blah, blah, blah. If the Mets are a win now team, the Mets should be getting a win now manager. And there's only one guy out there right now that's a win now Hall of Fame guy, like Bochy. Tito Francona, and it's Bochy. And yeah, why not, if you are going to do something, because this Kai Correa guy I know nothing about, yeah, he made the Guardians do something this year. Ha, great. Get Bochy. Bochy will change the character, the culture, and everything.
But Brad, hold on
and
a second. Brad,
probably win a World Series.
Yeah, but you should have made this call yesterday, because they're not bringing in Bochy, because they wouldn't make Bochy absorb somebody like Kai Correa. If you bring in somebody, and I don't know the value of Kai Correa, so I'm certainly not going to downgrade him. You know, and I know that you're not, but you like Kai Correa. What does he have? I don't know. He could actually be a really good asset. So
right.
I'm going to be open-minded here. But
Sure he might be.
Exactly. Stearns is no dummy. He's not bringing in some dope who's got some antiquated philosophies, whatever Correa is good at. And I don't really know yet.
Right.
I will find out, as will you. We'll do our homework on this. But I can promise you that it aligns with what Stearns values. Now, we did a lot of Giants yesterday, but if you called us at the end of the season or the day that Bochy got fired, hire Bochy, I would have been all for it, because Bruce Bochy is a Hall of Famer with multiple teams, but it's not happening. You got your bench coach, and they would have allowed Bochy to bring in his own bench coach. So Bochy's not going to he's not managing the Mets this year, start.
Well, that's the point. Don't get it twisted. This is not about Kai Correa and that he's not good or this is a bad
hire. Not at all.
Nothing to do with that. Most of us have no idea with anything about Kai Correa. All I know is that I don't think it's the proper structure or setup. I wouldn't do that. And to your point about Bochy, and I know Evan talked about this, was it yesterday?
With Boone? Yeah.
A lot of Yankees hire Bochy.
He said they should fire him.
Fire Boone and hire Bochy, whatever. Yeah. We, as baseball fans, me and UBT, the listeners, the majority of the listeners, we love the old school managers
No doubt.
We will never, ever, ever let that go.
Yeah.
They, meaning the majority of people in baseball, don't. It is that simple. So we could yell and scream about it and hire Bochy, hire this guy, hire Buck, keep Buck. The Mets tried it a couple years ago, different regime. It's also, you know, 3-4 years later, it's just different. The days of Bochy or Ron Washington or you name it, Melvin, whoever it may be, it's over. It was hanging on by a thread anyway. And now I think that's it. You're just not going to see it anymore. Maybe sometime in the future we'll actually hire, you know, managers to manage. It's the way of the game. It's all analytical driven right now, and I hate it.
It's not all, but it's too much, to your point. And think about this, Sal. The decision makers are getting younger and younger and younger.
Right.
So what do you think they're going to gravitate toward? The younger, analytically, numbers-oriented baseball person rather than a baseball lifer.
Right.
I'm with you.
Of course, we'd rather have
Give me Mattingly, give me Bochy, give me Melvin, give me Buck, give me, you know, I don't know if I would want Ron Washington to be my manager. But yeah, we're cut from the same cloth. Stearns is not.
But and it doesn't mean that he can't win.
Yeah.
But that's why I can't get behind it. I mean, how about hiring some scouts and have them go out there and scout players?
Well, they have the scouts. Scout list the Mets?
I don't believe as much as they need to be. And it's not just the Mets, it's in the game. But maybe the Mets need to do a little bit better than others. By the way, if you did hire Bochy, they would be telling him what to do.
Nah, that's why they're not hiring him, because they know that he wouldn't accept that.
That's the point. So in most front offices, and let's just use the Mets and Yankees, they're going to bring in a manager that they can control and tell what to do, which is why it's not going to be Bochy. And even if it is to give the fans a little piece of meat like Buck, they're still not going to let Buck fully manage the way that he wants to. It's going to be a collaboration with Buck and then Billy Epler talking about what we should do, analytics, here's what I suggest with the lineup. Buck says, no, I don't want to do that, whatever it may be. Then you're going to have a different type of confrontation.
Why do you think the Yankees bounced Girardi? Because he wasn't playing nice in the sandbox.
Bingo.
That's simple.
He didn't want to hear it. John is calling from St. Louis. What's up, John?
Hey, John.
Hey, good morning, guys. Before I get to the Correa point, I think the Mets already have their manager in waiting if they fire Mendoza. I think it's Carlos Beltran. And I think he would be the mix of the old school, but also he's connected with that front office and would listen to their input. So I think he's already on the staff.
Maybe.
But this Correa guy, I've just taken one look at him. I already know he's going to be an asset. With those satellite dishes coming out of the sides of his head, we're going to be able to hear the other team's pitch com, and he can relay that to the batter.
Well, so I haven't seen what has he got, big ears? You're making fun of his ears?
Does he really? Come on, man.
I mean, come on. That's not nice, John. Thanks for the call.
I was actually reading something. I shouldn't laugh.
Satellite dishes?
So he's...
That's not nice.
That's not nice, but it's funny. So he's saying that his ears are so big, he's going to hear the pitch com from the mound that just relay? Oh, man,
I have big ears myself, so come on. You can't... Come on. Who cares what he looks like? I couldn't care less. He's ultra analytical.
If that's the case, just bring back the gazoo from the Flintstones.
Yeah,
you didn't even watch the Flintstones, did you?
I'm familiar with the Flintstones.
You got him?
Yeah.
What's that big green alien that used to like
the Great Gazoo?
The Great Gazoo. Yeah. He had big ears.
Yeah,
Martian ears.
He's ultra analytical, and that's what I hate. So I don't care how big or small his ears are. I don't care what he looks like. I don't care where he's from. I know you get into that. Like, oh, is he from? Hey, he's from Brooklyn, BT. Oh,
hire him.
It changes everything.
Bring him in.
But he's ultra analytical. And that's something that I can't stand. BT and Sal on the Fan. More your calls as we come back. 888-808-1019.
Hey, T, you want to play a brand new game?
Sure, let's
do it. It's called Which Take Aged Worse. Are you ready?
Yep,
let's do it. We've got three options for the Which Take Aged Worse game. Let's start off with the fine executive producer of this show, Tommy Lugauer.
The Yankees were the big brother. Now, you're the little brother. That's right, the Mets are the big brother. And if you don't like it, do something about it.
That's aggressive, Tommy.
That's option number one.
Okay.
Option number two, I have to admit, is Evan Roberts.
The death of LOL Mets.
The death of LOL Mets. Okay.
Wait, I forgot what that was.
Why I said that?
Yeah, and I remember it, but I don't remember the circumstances.
Oh, I'll tell you if you're curious. It was the opening monologue after the Mets got Juan Soto, stole him away from the Yankees.
The death of LOL Mets.
All right, so we have Yanks are little brother, Mets are big brother. What you gonna do about it? We got death of LOL Mets. And our third competitor in the Which Take Age Worst game is the owner of the New York Mets, Steve Cohen.
I want to slay the negative, you know, Met fan perceptions. And we're on our way to doing that.
That's a tough one. So we've got Loogie with the big brother, Evan with the LOL, and Steve Cohen with, you know, slaying the perceptions.
Which one is definitely an in the future wrong? I think all of them could be.
Well, they're all wrong.
It's wrong. They're all wrong right now.
Right.
But which one are going to persist longest into the future?
Oh, that's easy. Is that how you're going to grade it? It's up to you. Mm.
I think it's Steve Cohen.
Steve Cohen is the winner, according to Tiki.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sean Morash?
I actually think it's Evan, because even when they put together a good roster and a good team, like they were in the playoff hunt till the end, it's still LOL Mets at every turn.
Yeah, but...
And it could be LOL Mets after playoff losses. Until they actually win a World Series, there's always going to be an angle.
I feel like the negative... What is it? What did Steve Cohen say?
Can you replay Steve again?
The negative something...
I think the Steve Cohen thing should actually be replayed every day on WFAN until something changes.
I want to slay the negative, you know, Met fan perceptions.
Right.
And we're on our way to doing that.
There it is. So the negative Met fan perception.
I want
to
slay.
This is why it won't happen.
Yeah.
Because one, the Met fan gets so excited signing Juan Soto or whatever that they turn into jerks, Tommy. And then so even when they're good, the negative perception persists. And then once what happens like it did this year, where you just completely fall apart. It's the negative Met fan perception is no matter what you do, it's still there.
Yeah. Ryan Helsley sucks.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Right.
I couldn't vote on this because I was obviously a participant. Same with Tommy. But if I had to endorse somebody as the winner, it's Steve Cohen.
Yeah.
And that sucks because at least I'm just a dumbass fan and Tommy is whatever he is. Steve Cohen's the owner of the team. And he had that strongly... I'm going to slay. He even used the word slay.
Yeah.
I'm going to slay.
Like the kids say now.
Yeah.
Or actually, probably not even now anymore.
Yeah, it's like a generation.
That's old.
Right. And it was so wrong. So there you go. Who'd you say again, Sean? You said it was me.
I said it was you, but the more I listen to it, I actually think what you said and what Cohen said are basically the same thing in different forms.
Yeah, except I'm me and he's
him. No, I agree.
That's a good point. I think what you're saying is right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just different variations. But you're right, because it's the owner, he has to get that.
I love how both of you just like toss Tommy to the side like it doesn't even count.
I love that you didn't pick mine, because that tells me that two Yankee fans think what I said could come to fruition.
I
just love the fact that you didn't pick it. I didn't take it as dismissive.
I think they didn't pick you because it was so stupid.
Oh, shut up. What's so stupid about it?
Because it was as if it was reality.
Right, exactly. What you said is just never even going to be a factor.
Like, mine and Steve's were like, oh, wow, maybe that's true. Mm-hmm. Yours, even in the height of the Mets' success, was like, what? Was he high?
Attendance is up. Ratings is up. Juan Soto is a Met. The Yankee fan is more worried about, you know, trolling a Blue Jay team that knocked you out, which is little brother behavior. But okay, that's fine. I think I have building blocks to being big brother here. Like I said, I gave you the battle. I'm not giving you the war yet.
Mm. Okay.
Right. I don't have the bandwidth to even argue with this. Because
you know I'm right, or I have potential to be right.
I think, unfortunately, you got eliminated from this competition because your opinion was so out there. I apologize, but at least you were in the competition. Let's go to Chris in Bayshore. Good afternoon, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, guys. How we doing?
Good.
Good.
Hey, listen, I got a suggestion for Aaron Glenn. I think he needs to call his good friend Dan Campbell up and get a little advice on how to deal with the press. I think Campbell shows you could be a tough guy and you can get your message across and still make sense. What do you think?
Yeah, well, Dan answers the questions. He clearly gets annoyed by some of the things that are asked of him, especially a couple of years ago when they weren't fully good. But he would answer the question and he would explain it like, look, guys, here's what's going on. He would always give you that.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, look, here's what we're doing. And hey, this is what we're trying to do. Like he would make it familiar to you and try to like embrace you with it as opposed to putting up a wall and a facade. Now, part of that's because Detroit media is probably not as aggressive as New York media, but it still is not an excuse to be rude.
What I wonder about with Aaron, not that he's inherently a rude individual, but he is an in-your-face individual.
100%.
Guy played in the NFL, and he played cornerback in the NFL. So part of me wonders, is that just genuinely him? He's a combative guy.
It might be.
And if that's the case, I'd hate to change that. So as much as a fan, I hate this because you're 0-6 and you're being a jerk to everybody.
But it's organic to him.
But if it is organic, it's tough to kill it. You know what I mean? Here's the concern Aaron Glenn is going to face. And Jets X Factor provided these stats because these are fascinating. And these are the numbers. I would love to ask AI, but AI is consistently wrong.
Very much
like,
so.
So for example, and I was going to send this to you, Sean, because we had a discussion off air about how never trust Google AI.
Sure.
So on the heels of Yamamoto pitching that complete game, the first thing I did was I Googled last postseason complete game. And it said Walker Buehler in 2021. And I'm like, that's not true. So I went to Walker Buehler. Of course it wasn't true. I don't think he ever went more than 7 innings in a playoff game. And so I'm like, okay.
How could he even come up with that?
I don't know.
Does it not understand what a complete game is?
I don't know.
And that's the problem, because it takes AI takes literal interpretations of words, and our English language is so bastardized that he doesn't know what complete means.
Right, which is, and the reason I bring this up is
or
Sean
it,
and I
should say it, it, not he.
Sean and I were talking off air because I was like, hey, can you do research on blah, blah, blah? And he said, oh, yeah, look. And I said, before he even answered, I said, was it Google AI?
It was.
I think so.
It was the Mendoza Waffle House in the game. No problem.
Oh, there you go. That's right. We talked about for the kid quarterback from Indiana, Fernando Mendoza.
Fernando Mendoza, yeah.
How his nickname is the Waffle House, which I later found out it's not his nickname, it's his receiver's nickname. And so I was saying to Sean, did you get it from Google AI? Because they're always wrong.
Mm.
And subsequently, yes.
And so now when you say that in context, the receivers are the Waffle House because they're always open?
Exactly.
Exactly.
That makes sense. Now, with Fernando Mendoza, it made no sense.
And that's why you can never trust Google AI. So I was going to Google AI, like the history of coaches who start 0-6. And of course, it led me down a horrible path. But sometimes we're allowed to be lazy because Jets X Factor, which is one of my favorite accounts and websites to check, did the research themselves. And I'm going to trust them because they're always right. Are you ready for this?
Go ahead.
Before Aaron Glenn, 17 coaches since 1980 have started 0-6 to begin their coaching careers.
Wow.
17. 13 of the 17, that's 76%, never led that franchise to the postseason. Here are the exceptions. Dan Campbell, which Aaron Glenn has brought up, and our last caller just brought up, Zach Taylor with the Bengals, Kyle Shanahan, and Jimmy Johnson. Now, those examples, I mean, Zach Taylor, I don't know. But those other examples are really good. But the vast majority of coaches that begin their careers 0-6, it doesn't go well.
Right. It just, that becomes who you are, unfortunately. Sports Talk on WFAN is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday, all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today.
And this is important because Aaron Glenn has mentioned numerous times when asked about his tough start, hey, you know, I spoke to Parcells, mm-hmm. who's had his rough beginnings. I spoke to Jimmy Johnson, who's on this list, Dan Campbell, all this. Yes, you can overcome 0-6. No one is denying that, but the vast majority don't.
Yeah.
That's the problem. That's the history you're facing. 76% of the time, when you begin your coaching career like this, you never sniff the postseason. And so, yeah, it's possible. It's like, can the Brewers come back from 0-2? Sure they can. It's unlikely. History tells you it's unlikely. You could tell me about the 96 Yankees all day. You could tell me about the 86 Mets all day. But the truth is, you are probably going to end up in the dustpan of history.
Why not get the actual reporter on the horn? We welcome in Andy Martino of SNY. You can check out his columns on SNY.TV. Also see him on Baseball Night in New York. I know he'll be on the show tonight at 6 o'clock. I heard their host is excellent as well. But Andy, thank you for joining us. Let's start with the Mets change here, going with Kai Correa. My bigger issue is that I didn't think that this was a Mendoza choice. How did this come about, and how was Kai Correa selected for the Mets bench coach?
Is it a me head thing to pull the hoodie up on top of the head? Like you guys, I could be here too if that's what we're doing today.
It's freezing in here. That's why we had the hoods up.
No, what it is. I'm good here with the hat. No, this wasn't something that was forced on Mendoza from everything I heard, Sal. I understand the suspicion. I think, you know, any coach who's 37 years old, you wonder, what's that about? Is that because he's moldable for a front office? That's where the mind goes. But I do know for a fact that Carlos Mendoza likes this guy, is on board with it. Obviously, the front office has to be on board with it, too. And this instance, he brings particular qualities that David Stearns made very clear in his post-mortem press conference a couple weeks ago that he was interested in, which is run prevention. Mike Sarbaugh was an excellent infield coach. But the Mets decided to move on there. And Kai Correa is a guy who's got a lot of experience coaching defenses. And that was a primary thing that appealed to them. And I'll say this too. I don't know the guy. So having no opinion of it out of the gate, as I was working last night on this and mostly the Yankees coaching changes stuff, which was more going on yesterday, and I will get to, I was just getting texts from people in the industry. Like, oh, by the way, Kai Correa is awesome. Oh, by the way, the Mets got better today. I even heard that he was on a short list at one point in the recent past of being a Mets manager candidate before Mendoza came on the scenes during one of their cycles. So This is somebody who has a good reputation in the business.
Yeah, he seems to have a good reputation, and the Mets absolutely have to catch the baseball better. They were just bad at that last year. So I think that that's wise, too, to try to tighten that up. And maybe I'm going to play the semantical game, Andy, but to me, there's a big difference between the Mets shoving Kai Correa down the throat of their manager. And if you're saying that's not the case, okay, I'll believe you. But I still need to know who first brought Correa's name up. Did Mendoza go to them and say, I like this guy? I would imagine they went to him and said, we like this guy.
I don't know the answer to that, BT, honestly, but
that's an important question for me.
I don't think I would push back on that. I don't think it's as important a question. As long as Carlos Mendoza's there, he and David Stearns need to have a collaborative thing where it's like, ideally, leadership isn't top-down like you're talking to this guy. It's a conversation, right? So that's what those two strive for. And I will say that even as the Mets leadership endured a very, very rough end of the season, Stearns and Mendoza remained in a good collaborative And by collaborative, I don't mean code for Mendy's a puppet. I mean collaborative, like they collaborate. There's two different ways to take that that word in this business.
Yeah, that's true.
So I understand the question, and by process wise, I don't know like the first moment that the name came up, but I know that you're looking for a coach. You're looking for quote unquote run prevention. This is a guy in Correa whose name was going to be on the tip of anyone's tongue who was looking for those qualities. And like I said, I just know from talking to the relevant people yesterday that this wasn't forced on the manager.
Okay, so let me ask you this now, and maybe this will provide even more clarity or something else to talk about. When Mendoza assembled his first staff, was that all him?
I think that was my understanding, and I would want to double check this probably with my Met sources, but since you're asking me here on the spot, my understanding is that was largely a staff that was filled out by the organization rather than by the manager. Jose Rosado, the bullpen coach, was a guy who was Mendoza's hire. I'm not sure how many others were directly his hires. He, again, with that collaboration piece, Carlos was involved and even ran interviews, but I know it was important. For example, the organization wanted to give him a manager who had, a bench coach who had manager experience, John Gibbons for the first 2 years. Jeremy Hefner was definitely like, this guy's good, we're keeping him.
Yep.
I believe Eric Chavez was under contract, had been the bench coach under Showalter. That didn't work out, so they said, how about hitting coach again? He inherited Barnes. So there was a lot of like, we've got some people we like and we're keeping them, but your buddy Rosado can go to be the bullpen coach. Probably some of that.
And this is more...
Which by the way, is common.
Oh, so I was going to ask is this common practice in Major League Baseball for the majority of teams now where instead of the old days, hey, we're hiring Bobby Valentine, you pick your staff, Bobby. And I don't know that specific. Yeah. I'm just using that as an example. Is this more normal practice with the majority of baseball teams where the front office has a say on the staff?
No doubt. No doubt at all. I mean, it varies per staff, but even when Terry Francona, you can't come to a manager job with any more credibility than him. When he took the Reds job, I heard it was like, here's your coaches, Tito. So, yeah, that's the kind of how it works.
All right, so can you explain, we're talking with Andy Martino, SNY.TV, for the columns. You can check him out on SNY.TV, Baseball Night in New York, later on at 6 o'clock tonight. What exactly is a director of hitting development?
It's a fancy title. That's what exactly it is.
Is he the hitting coach?
Is Jeff Albert going to be in uniform as the hitting coach?
Oh, yeah. Yes. He's going to be in uniform with the major league team, but they're going to hire hitting coaches, coach or coaches under him, reporting to him as well. He's been running the hitting for the Mets organization over the past couple of years. Billy Epler hired him from the Cardinals to do that a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been with the Mets organization since then. And now he will be promoted to, the buck stops with him on the Mets hitting approach. And there will be guys in the cage working with hitters as this, whatever they want to call them, co-hitting coach, assistant hitting coach, that's all up to like how that shakes out. But yes, Jeff Albert will be in major league uniform, with the team as in that role.
Do any other teams have a director of major league? Mm-hmm. Like, I've never heard of this before. Are the Mets inventing this?
I mean, there's so many different weird titles now. The Mets are actually on the old school end of this. You know, there's teams that have the associate manager, the assistant to the regional manager, all kinds of different weird titles. Some of this is to get people hired, right? Like, if you're on one team's staff, you need to give them, you're not allowed to leave to make a lateral move. So sometimes they inflate a title just to get someone. So there's all that. Like, the Texas Rangers under Bochy, I think, had an associate manager. I could be wrong about that. So my point is, like, titles are getting weird. I don't recall off the top of my head. I haven't gone through every coaching staff list to see if they have this exact Jeff Albert title elsewhere. But the concept of trying to have some organizational cohesion, have a guy who developed players, who's now running it at the major league level, that makes sense to me. Whether he's the right guy or not, we'll see. But you would want cohesion from the St. Lucie Mets to the New York Mets and how we approach hitting.
Yes.
Just hopefully it's a good approach.
Yeah.
But the idea of cohesion up and down is good.
I would just want to make sure you said he's going to be in uniform, which means there'll be a more conventional hitting coach or co-hitting coach in uniform as well. And I know the Mets are aware of this, clearly, but, you know, to have two or three people with the absolute 100% same exact hitting philosophy is probably not going to be the case. And if there's even a 5% variance, that could be a shade of gray that could get unnecessarily complicated for the hitters. Give me one guy.
You could also argue, BT, that diversity of opinion is important. I would be afraid if an organization... The Mets would have a problem if they wanted everyone to believe the exact same thing, in my opinion.
But let me ask you this, Andy. Andy, hold on. I hear you. I get that as a general concept, but for and I know the game's very different. I get that. But for all these years, there was one general consensus on the approach for all these major league teams, and it worked for a lot of champions in the, I know this is a million years ago, 70s, 80s, 90s. So why do we need group thought now? What's the organizational philosophy? Swing it and hit it.
You mean for years, are you saying it was the same philosophy?
Yeah, like Walt Reniac and Charlie Lau and Lou Piniella. They didn't have five guys coordinating how to swing the bat.
So each team had one guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, look, part of that is that there's all this tech. I think the Yankees had a really good mix last year. James Rowson and Pat Rosler were like real hitting guys, like approach guys. Aaron Judge, who's not much of a data guy, liked them. And then you had Casey Dykes, who an assistant hitting coach, who's more into like the data and the numbers and stuff. On the pitching side last year with the Mets, it was Jeremy Hefner, the former big leaguer, and Desi Drushel, who knows grips and sciencey stuff. And so there are times when you can say like, hey, these two skills complement each other.
Yes.
And I guess that's what teams are going for. And sometimes you just have to promote a guy to keep him. That's what's going on with the Yankees. I just reported last night, Jake Hurst is a guy who's been their hitting coordinator in the minor leagues. They're promoting him up to the big league staff in part because they got a request from another team to make him a major league hitting coach. And in order to keep him in the organization, they had to promote him. Mm-hmm. That's a common thing, too. So sometimes staffs can get crowded because of that exact reason.
I thought it was a little fishy. Let's just get to the Yankees here. I got some other stuff I want to circle back to the Mets, but you mentioned the Yankees. Yeah. It seemed a little fishy to me, the fact that they were delaying speaking to the media after the season ended. I know they'll be speaking tomorrow now, both Boone and Cashman. Then we saw some of the coaching changes or possible changes. Was there more to it than just, oh, these guys are maybe going to get other opportunities? Or was this a little bit of an intended shakeup on the Yankees staff?
No, they let go a couple of guys straight up. Mike Harkey and Travis Chapman, bullpen and first base coach.
And was that Boone's doing, or this is the organization, you know, higher than Boone getting rid of these guys?
I would be surprised if Aaron Boone wanted Mike Harkey gone. They're pretty close. I'd be surprised. I'm not sitting here reporting exactly how that went down, but I'm just telling you, like, knowing the dynamics. Again, not uncommon. Aaron Boone's best friend is Phil Nevin, and Brian Cashman fired him a few years ago. This happens. The Harkey thing was interesting because he's been with him for so long and is very well liked. But he and Chapman let go. Pat Rosler's talking to them, the hitting coach, talking to them about potential different roles in the organization. They like him. He's 65 years old. He might want to step into something a little bit less demanding. That's something they're trying to figure out. And they might lose Luis Rojas and James Rowson, the managerial opportunities. Yep. But I can tell you that if those guys don't get manager jobs, we're done talking about changes in the Yankees staff. Osmus and the rest of the Matt Blake and all those guys will come back if they want to.
Do you anticipate a feisty, combative Cashman tomorrow?
That's always so hard to say. I hope so. It's fun when he's dropping F-bombs and all that. I like that stuff. Who wouldn't?
Yeah.
Sometimes he goes into filibuster mode where it's like, I'm going to go monotone. I'm going to bore you all to death for 60 minutes, and therefore you'll walk out of here exhausted. And that is a strategy that he employs at times, and you tip your cap to it in the media like, all right, you win. I'm bored.
Yep.
Get me out of here. But there's times when he, as you know, he gets a little feisty. We will see which side of the bed he wakes up on tomorrow. I'm hoping the grumpy side.
So do we. Now, he was feisty with Sherman, you know, as they were sparring a year ago with Volpe.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, let's face it. He's got to come clean and, you know, either admit that he's wrong, which he probably won't, or at least give us a plan that he's going to have to earn the job next year. Like, that's the thing that has to happen with Volpe.
I agree. It's the Yankees need to really have an honest conversation about shortstop and not just keep going, taking the path of least resistance and keep going with Volpe. Though unfortunately, it's they're going to have to get creative with a trade that I can't quite see yet in order to replace it.
Yep.
Because
yep.
Caballero is not a hitter. Caballero is perfect as that Swiss Army knife utility guy if you have a regular everyday shortstop. That's how you want to use Caballero, in my opinion. And just objectively, that's why Volpe kept starting during the postseason. Because Caballero was great in that other role. There are not a lot of great free agent options at shortstop. So again, they'd have to come up with a trade idea that I personally haven't come up with yet in order to replace Volpe for next year.
BT and Sal on the Fan, we're talking about Andy Martino of SNY. Check him out. All the columns, SNY.tv. Check him out on Baseball Night in New York, 6 o'clock later on this evening. I have a couple more for you. We were talking about this before about scouting. You know, because all this stuff leads to analytics. It's not old school anymore. It's more analytics and data, and scouting has been minimized. Do you think, or do you know, if the Mets scout as much as the other teams in Major League Baseball since David Stearns has taken over?
Well, I know that the Yankees are given credit for being a particularly old school organization in this way, and it's helped them quite a bit over the past period of time, the success that they've had. The Mets they don't have as many pro scouts as the Yankees. They don't. There are teams like the Dodgers, the Rays. I'm trying to think of other examples of teams that are sort of modern but also blend a lot of pro scouting. And there are other teams like the Orioles, back the Astros under Jeff Lunau, where David Stearns worked, that don't have as much of a pro scouting presence. And at the moment, the Mets are more targeted in their pro scouting and believe in a lot of numbers and video and things like that with some boots on the ground. Mm-hmm. But certainly the two teams that I cover, the Mets and the Yankees, the Yankees just have more of a head count with quote-unquote old-school scouting.
I'm not even sure if you know the answer to this, but was that like a budgetary thing from the Wilpons and Steve never corrected it?
No, the Wilpons were a very strong scouting organization. Okay. Fred Wilpon believed very strongly in that. Omar Minaya is the GM.
That's true. That's true.
A big scouting guy, so... And even before that, like if you want to really go back, Joe McElvain, Passion, was a big scouting guy.
Joey Mack.
So
he's good.
The Wilpon era Mets are huge on scouting.
Right, so that's more of a David Stearns thing, which is why I have an issue with it. And when you have as many moves as he had come up short this year, you have to question that and think that maybe a change would be in order of at least the thought process. Last one for me, Andy, and we appreciate your time. Who do you think's on a hotter seat going into next year, Boone or Mendy?
Oh, definitely. Unfortunately for Mendy, like if we're asking to compare the two, they just came off of that collapse. Yankees were in the postseason. That's a totally different vibe going into the next season. And the cold, hard reality of this business is you look at contract length, where like Boone's right now starting a new extension. So teams don't like to pay guys to go away, generally, unless there's a complete disaster happening. Mendoza's in the last year of guaranteed control over his contract. So for those reasons alone, and I think Carlos is a very good manager, but for those reasons, it's got to be Carlos.
You know, Andy, I thought that I was done with talking to Andy Martino, SNY, BT and Sal, not the Fan. But I have to get into this, and I don't know where it's going to go. So I do think, and I've said this for a while, there's going to be a lot of non-baseball nights in 2027. We're getting a stoppage, all right?
Oh,
as you know, I know you know this as well as anybody. How will that impact the motivation, either favorably or less than that, to spend extra money this year and go for it, whether it's the Yankees finally doing something in Judge's prime and winning, or same with Lindor for the Mets? Like, will that impact the Mets and the Yankees this offseason?
That's a great question. I want to dig into that a little bit more with my sources on the two teams. I will say that the financial terms in which Steve Cohen came into this business, where he had this dramatic financial advantage, could be ending. So he's a smart guy, and you know he's got to be cognizant of that in some way, shape, or form. But what they also have to be careful of is, what if there is some kind of salary cap and floor after 27? Like, what's the situation? Like, if you're already committed to way over that, are you going to be grandfathered in with some higher payroll? Is it going to be gradual, this cap and floor? These are all questions that are unknowns that they have to ask you. Like, if you spend a gazillion dollars this winter, and then you get to 2028 and there's a cap, Are you in trouble with that?
Well, you like, have to. I think you nailed it. You'd have to be grandfathered. And don't. And this is just a guess, but a fairly educated one. Don't you think that it's more about raising the floor rather than capping the ceiling for baseball?
I think that if the owners tried to do either, the players would walk for a year or two.
So I'm terrified that's
going to happen. They're never going to. The entire Players Association's existence is based on resisting the cap from the 60s. And they regard the floor as part of a cap system. So, and the owners are like, no, we got to do something about this. This is our time. So that's why I'm really scared that I'm going to be, I don't know what, digging ditches in 2027, because the thing that I get paid to talk about, it feels a little dicey right now.
We should be doing multiple rounds of Guess Who on Baseball Night in New York. All the different games
that we can watch. I don't know. Baseball Night in New York. I don't know what it'll be called. Something else Night in New York.
I lied. I have one more quickie for you. Do you think off of this, there's no other way to put it, embarrassing year for the New York Mets, Steve Cohen gets, I don't want to say angry, because sometimes that doesn't lead to the best decisions, but Steve Cohen going to go big this offseason?
I think he's going to try to go smart. I don't see what the bigger thing is than Soto, right? Like, what's out there that's big compared to what he's already done? That's one of the reasons why it's so disappointing for that organization that this year went the way it did. I think he's going to do his best to just continue to be rational and try to build a great organization like the Dodgers have, and not be reactive. But I think if going big means bringing in an ace pitcher via trade, that could be an interesting place to look.
I just want to get your opinion on this, what I believe to be a budgeting hit song on the way. I don't know if you heard this, but check this out before we go. Mm-hmm. Here, go ahead, hit that for him.
Hey, let's do it again.
It's a Casser Idiots.
I know you're a music aficionado, big Beatles fan. I think that that's a hit. I have the ability to detect hits when I hear it, I think, but I'd be curious to get your opinion. Andy, what do you think of that?
Can I give you the biggest bummer of all time? You need to talk to your tech ops people, because that was silence for me on Zoom here.
Hear it. Oh, I love it.
Well, now I want to
take it. I considered during that period of just completely like performing and playing it off and being like, oh yeah, it was great. But I'm not that good an actor.
Now I want to go on strike. All right, Andy, thank you for the call. We appreciate your time. We'll see you later on tonight on SNY at 6 p.m.
Good stuff, man.
Always fun, guys.
Yeah, Andy's got the info, so help us out a little bit with certain things. Look, the coaching staff, we know it's not a huge deal, but you did get some insight into how these decisions are being made, and then you could determine for yourself if you think that that's the right way or the wrong way.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
Hey, it's Boomer
and Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.